Welcome to Locked On Warriors, your daily podcast on all things Warriors, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm your host, Wes Goldberg, Warriors writer for the Mercury News. The plan for Friday, we'll have Connor Letourneau from the San Francisco Chronicle on to talk about his report that the Warriors are prepared to take Anthony Edwards, number one overall in the draft. And then Charles T. Hamilton joins me later on to discuss some free agent targets. So a lot of offseason stuff to get to, even though we have no idea when that's going to be. But I had actually planned to start with some mailbag questions, and I got on Twitter and asked you guys for some mailbag, and a lot of you guys responded with some really good stuff. And I really want to get to them, but I want to give them the right time, the time that they deserve. And so we hadn't done a mailbag in a long time. I thought it would be a good time, but I'm going to postpone it even more because I pre-recorded the conversations with Connor and then with Charles before I recorded my mailbag segment, which I was going to do by myself. And the conversation with Connor and with Charles got so good that they went long. And so the show is already almost an hour long. And I didn't want to make it too long. I wanted to save some of the mailbag questions. So we're going to save them for next week. So instead, let's just jump right into my conversation with Connor, which will be followed by my conversation with Charles. And then this will be the last show of the week. So I appreciate you guys listening. If you haven't listened to the shows earlier in the week, I had Jason Richardson on Monday for a short, 18, I think, ish minute podcast where he broke down some of the stuff about the We Believe season. He told some great stories about that year and had some good insight about his career and what he thought would have been how that team would have competed had he not gotten traded after that We Believe season. And then on Thursday, I had Chad Ford on, who recently launched a podcast, the Locked On Podcast Network, Chad Ford's Big Board. And I had him on for about 45 minutes to talk about all things about the NBA draft and who he thinks the Warriors should take at number one, which, clue, not Anthony Edwards. He actually believes that they should take LaMelo Ball, and he outlines his entire reasons why. And he makes a pretty convincing argument. He actually had me going there for a little bit. I'm still not quite there yet with LaMelo Ball, honestly. Look, I get the genius-level passing stuff. I get that he's 18, really young, got a really high ceiling, and if you're drafting number one, you have to draft for that high ceiling. And I get the knocks with Anthony Edwards. But as Connor will lay out in my conversation coming up, I just think there's a few more things with Anthony Edwards that I like as far as a number one guy. And just some of the stuff that the Warriors need as far as superior athlete, can do stuff defensively, and I don't know that LaMelo is ever going to come around defensively the way that Anthony Edwards, I believe, will come around. And look, it all kind of comes down to motor and that sort of stuff, which is hard for you and I to judge, not being able to interview and talk to these guys and kind of go through the process that the Warriors scouts and Bob Myers are going to have to go through before the draft. But I still like some of the tools that Anthony Edwards brings to the table a little bit more than LaMelo. I don't know that they need a genius-level passer when you have Steph and when you have Draymond. And I don't, and he's a good athlete, but he's not a great athlete like Anthony Edwards is, and Edwards seems like such a late bloomer. I know there's questions, but we also see, like, with these late bloomer guys a lot, that they end up panning out. And the Warriors can kind of let him play into a role. And they can afford to be patient with him, where I think a lot of these teams in the top five will expect a little bit too much from Anthony Edwards too soon. And I don't know that the Warriors would have that. And he's not the number one guy on my board. I told Chad Ford who the number one guy on my board was on Thursday's show. I bring it up again with Connor later on, but I'm not quite there with LaMelo. But again, the Chad Ford podcast is very, very interesting to listen to, if not only because he has great insight on just this entire process. And because, we haven't heard from him for like 2 years. And if you haven't subscribed to his podcast, I definitely would. And then the conversation with Charles later on, we get into our free agent targets, that thing that we do every Friday. Really good names that got me excited. I think this was the best one yet, actually. So we get into that. And I did ask him one mailbag question about big names the Warriors have been tied to in the past and how that panned out. And how that relates to some of the big names that they are tied to now and over the next, what we suspect, the players we suspect they'll be tied to over the next couple of years. And so we do get to one mailbag question, but again, saving the mailbag for next week because these conversations I thought were really good. So enjoy this Friday edition of Locked On Warriors. But first, From an early morning breakfast burrito to a 12-pack of beers while you watch the game, sometimes you just need what you need delivered fast, and that's where Postmates comes in. If you're like me, you probably start thinking about what you want to eat for dinner while you're eating lunch, and I love food. And that's why I love using Postmates. They deliver food from every restaurant I can think of right to my door. But Postmates doesn't just deliver burgers and sushi. They actually make my life easier with grocery delivery and whatever I can think of delivery too. Convenience stores, clothing stores, you name it. And during this pandemic, I mean, that stuff's really important. You know, I know you're using a app right now. You're using it. You're using Postmates. You're using maybe another one of these food delivery services. But Postmates gets all this other stuff too, which if you don't want to go out in this age of social distancing is really convenient. So no more trips to the store, no more late night fast food runs. I don't even have to worry about where I grab lunch anymore. Just download the Postmates app on iOS or Android, find your restaurants, and get anything that you want delivered within the hour. And for a limited time, Postmates is giving our listeners $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days. To start your free deliveries, download the app and use the code LOCKEDONNBA. That's the code LOCKEDONNBA for $100 of free delivery credit, no minimum purchase, for your first 7 days when you download the Postmates app. Anything you need, anytime you need it, Postmate it. All right, we're getting to our conversation with Connor Letourneau from the San Francisco Chronicle. All things Anthony Edwards and other opinions about the Warriors draft strategy. That's coming up next. This is Locked On Warriors. Connor Letourneau from the San Francisco Chronicle joins me now. Connor, you reported recently that the Warriors, if they got the number one pick in the draft lottery, are prepared to take Georgia's Anthony Edwards. And you wrote, quote, "In the coming weeks, draft analysts will pass the shelter-in-place time by laying out each player's flaws in detail, but no amount of nitpicking will change the fact that in lieu of satisfying alternatives, Edwards would be the Warriors' best option at number one." Now, there's been some different reporting out there recently, which we'll get into, but what is it about Edwards in your reporting that you found that the Warriors like, and why are they prepared to take him over anybody else in this draft?
Yeah, I think it really just comes down to his physical tools. He has a physical package that no one else in the draft has. He's explosive, dynamic, he's an elite athlete, and he's got the length and athleticism to defend multiple positions. The big knocks on him right now are his motor and his shot selection. I think that he's a gifted enough athlete where he could project as a really solid NBA player, even if he doesn't develop a reliable jump shot. I kind of see him in the same vein as like a Jaylen Brown type. Jaylen Brown is not an elite shooter, but he, you know, is so gifted and so smart defensively that he has become, you know, a really solid pick at that number three spot. And I think if he had gone number one that year, would have been a solid number one pick. I think he that is kind of the range I see him going in. To me, that would be an okay ceiling for him, but I think he can even be better than that. I think he has all-star potential, and this is a draft where there are no sure things, right? There's been so much debate over, you know, how murky the top five, top six picks in this draft are, and I think of a draft where there's not an obvious guy, I think he's the closest you're going to come to a sure thing.
First of all, you stole my Jaylen Brown take. That was my thing. I've said that to you.
I didn't so even know that. I never heard you say that. So
I've said it
I
to
thought
you.
I was saying something new.
No, that was my take. I appreciate you using it on my own show. I hope you're not going around a 95.7 like you have been this last week and saying that, but that's okay. But you're right.
Well, you can't steal something if you didn't know it was already out there.
I've definitely said it to you, and you probably don't remember it, but it's in your brain, and I seeded it there. So either way, I'll take credit for it. The reason it's a good take, thank you very much, is because similar to Jaylen at Cal, who was used in just a non-offensive, like just the wrong offensive role in a non-offense, right? I mean, that Cal offense that year was terrible, despite it having three eventual NBA players on it. No, none of those players succeeded to the level Jaylen Brown did, but Ivan Rabb and Jabari Bird played in the league for a little bit. So you ought to be able to put something better on the floor than they did. And what they did instead was they put the ball in Jaylen's hands too much. They didn't really create enough space for him. And it was just sort of this jumbled mess all the time. And that kind of looks like what Georgia did this year. They put the ball in Anthony Edwards' hands, didn't provide enough space, didn't really let him, didn't lean into what it is he did well. I wonder, Anthony Edwards is, I think, on the top of a lot of people draft boards. You know, other people might have James Wiseman or LaMelo Ball, just like in a general sense. But He's up there in the top three on almost every draft board I've seen. I wonder if he would have been in a right offense, how much more bullish we'd be on Anthony Edwards. You know what I mean? Because despite all of that, he's still one of the consensus top picks. And it, granted, it's because it's a weak draft, but had he been used in an off-ball role earlier in the season as opposed to late in the season, like you lay out in your article for the San Francisco Chronicle, but if you were there, if you had a primary ball handler who could really function as that and was able to put him in positions to succeed like he may have, especially if you were drafted to the Warriors, he certainly would have. But what is it the Warriors are willing to deal with Anthony Edwards? Like all this stuff, the motor questions, they're willing to deal with all that stuff just because we believe that we can get the most out of this guy. Is this more of them being confident in their own infrastructure?
I think that's a big part of it. I think that they're confident in with the locker room dynamic they've built. The fact that any young player is going to join a team with Draymond Green, Steph Curry, and Klay Thompson and know they need to be immediately accountable. And so, you know, someone like Anthony Edwards, if he gives that wavering effort that he gave in Georgia and is kind of just walking back in transition, you know that Draymond Green is going to chew him out. And then after one or two of those, you don't expect Anthony Edwards to keep making those types of mistakes. So all that stuff matters. You know, a really important thing in player evaluation is just understanding the situation that player was in and deciding, you know, what you can stomach and what you can't. And I think that he was in a situation in Georgia that was far from ideal, as you touched upon. And you look at a lot of other guys who were in situations as college freshmen that weren't ideal. And if they had the physical tools, if they had a lot of the other intangibles, a lot of them ended up still being very successful. A guy I keep going back to is Bradley Beal. You look at his numbers his freshman year at Florida, he didn't shoot very well. He had a lot of the same knocks on him that Anthony Edwards has, but he was just so freakish athletically, and he had the body type, he had a lot of the other stuff that scouts are looking for, and look how it's turned out, you know? So I feel like Anthony Edwards, I feel confident saying that Anthony Edwards is going to be a very good NBA player, and I don't think you can say that about a lot of players in this draft. And the guy's only 18 years old. You know, this is a guy who didn't go to an elite powerhouse high school program. He didn't even play on the highest level of the AAU circuit. So I think some people had unrealistic expectations when he entered college. His basketball schooling was really very low when he arrived under Tom Crean.
Yeah, I think I do wonder how much he's going to work off the court, right? And that's really the major question that the Warriors are going to have to answer is this guy obviously has all the physical tools. He's young, and that matters, especially in the top five. But you look at the guys who the Warriors have drafted in past drafts, and it's a little bit different because they're drafting at, like, number 28. They're drafting in the second round. But you look at a guy like Jordan Poole, who exhibited basketball feel at Michigan, you know, had a skill set to hang his hat on, which a lot of people thought was shooting, which turns out not to be the case, but they drafted him under that impression. Eric Paschal, who was extremely productive at Villanova. Like, Anthony Edwards doesn't really check either of those boxes. You know what I mean? Like, Anthony Edwards didn't exhibit great basketball feel. He was productive, but not as productive as maybe you would have hoped from a number one pick at Georgia. But I guess when you're picking where the Warriors are going to be picking in the top five, that sort of stuff doesn't matter as much. And you're focused more on ceiling. And I would agree with you, Anthony Edwards, of every player in this draft, may have the highest ceiling. I would probably put him, I think he has a higher ceiling than LaMelo Ball. But I would probably say it's those two. Unless I'm trying to think of who else. Like, I'm not big on Wiseman's ceiling. I don't think he has a very high ceiling. So I would probably put those two, but I like Anthony Edwards, what he could do defensively.
If you're someone who's going to make the argument that Anthony Edwards shouldn't be the number one pick because of X reason and X reason and X reason, then okay, tell me who should be the number one pick. And whoever you're going to name, I'm going to go down a list of reasons why that person should not be the number one pick, because every other player in this draft is flawed. All of these guys have warts. They all have weaknesses.
Right.
And to me, when it comes down to weighing the weaknesses and deciding, you know, which ones you can handle and which you can't. And to me, I can handle Anthony Edwards' shortcomings much more than I can handle LaMelo Ball or James Wiseman or some of these other guys.
Yeah, and if you think about what the Warriors are missing, they are missing a freak athlete. They do not have one on the roster. They just don't. Like Andrew Wiggins, a little bit. I think that's – he's not the athlete he was when he first came to the NBA, though, anymore. Like Anthony Edwards is a freak athlete. And that would – like that's not something you can just find, especially not at the end of the draft or in free agency. Like those guys are just not available that often at his age, right, with his ceiling. And so – like
I think if he had been in a different situation his freshman year, if he had gone to a little bit more stable program with more pieces around him, this might not even be a debate. You know, if he had been able to play to his strengths from day one, been playing off the ball, had more freedom, you know, offensively and defensively, if he had less pressure to shoulder a load offensively and maybe he put in a little bit more effort defensively, I do feel like there's a very good chance that he would have shot 45% from the field instead of 40% from the field and 36% from three instead of 29%. And that makes all the difference in a lot of evaluators' minds.
You went on the radio earlier this week and basically dismissed Rick Bucher's report for Bleacher Report that the Warriors were looking at James Wiseman if they were to get the number one pick. Tell me why.
I hate doing this because like, I do feel like all media members kind of need to have some respect for each other and have each other's back because we're all in it together to a certain degree. But Rick has misreported several major things about the Warriors just in the past year, and it's kind of getting to the point where I can't really bite my tongue anymore, especially if it's a report that directly contradicts my own reporting from a couple weeks ago. I reported that the Warriors were not high on James Wiseman or LaMelo Ball for that matter. And Rick came out a couple days ago and reported that James Wiseman's at the number one on the Warriors draft board. That is 100% inaccurate. I don't know what his sourcing was, but I'm confident in my sourcing and that's not true. James Wiseman is someone that I think the Warriors would be interested in if you know, a little bit later in the draft, if we're talking about late lottery, something like that. But as a potential top three, top five pick, maybe even number one pick, there's just too many questions. And there's also the fundamental fact that the Warriors don't feel like they need a go-to guy at that center position. You know, the entire dynasty, they never had that. They actually are really high on Marquese Chriss. You have to understand, Marquese Chriss is only 2 years older than James Wiseman. He's only 22 years old. Would you rather have Marquese Chriss right now or James Wiseman? I honestly think the Warriors' answer is Marquese Chriss, and if that's
especially
their answer,
at
then
a tenth
James Wiseman to sit on the bench,
a tenth at what Wiseman's making, by the way, which is very important.
Exactly, which matters a lot.
You and I are hearing the same stuff about James Wiseman. I agree with all my reporting backs the same stuff up that you've been. I think I've written it too, not as recently as you have, but. I don't think he's in their top five. And I honestly would be surprised if he was the number one center on their board. Really, I do.
I'm not even sure if they really have him listed because they know that they don't want him at whatever range he's going to go in. Because he's almost definitely not going to fall out of the top five. They don't see him as a top five guy. So if they took him, it would just be for someone else who wants him and they're trading down.
And they need to be very smart with how they also spend this money. And we don't talk enough about that. I talk about it all the time. And I know the Warriors are – like, they need – yeah, you have the luxury of a top five pick, but you need to be a little bit cost conscious with it because they're going to have the highest payroll in the league for the foreseeable future probably. Steph Curry is going to be the highest paid player in the league. They opened up this new arena. They're going to be deep in the tax, and they're going to be trying to chase championships while doing it. First of all, with Wiseman, I don't think that he gets on the floor over Marquese Chriss or even Kevon Looney if he's healthy. I don't think he gets on the floor before those guys. So you're going to pay that guy 10 plus mil a year and then have to – and we see guys like Wiseman all the time. Look at Andre Drummond. It just happened with him. When his four-year contract is up, he becomes – you have to pay for that, right? They are such a tantalizing talent, and they have the size that you can't teach and et cetera – that they end up making $20-plus million a year on their next contract. So if you're the Warriors and you're taking a developmental guy like James Wiseman, who may not get on the floor, who you may not trust during this championship window, who then you're going to have to later pay when this championship window is closed. I don't see that as a shrewd financial move. And if the Warriors have done anything, it's been shrewd financial decisions, right?
When you're talking about a draft where there's not a sure thing, on a basic level, you need to look at how many elite centers are there in the NBA? How many? Wait, what? Four? Top?
I would say let's Joel Embiid, Nikola Jokic. I don't know what you call Karl Anthony Towns, center or power forward. You know, Anthony Davis, same sort of deal. Bam Adebayo's getting there. Am I missing anybody?
Maybe
Rudy Gobert. And Rudy Gobert. And then Rudy Gobert is only elite in the regular season.
Tops, right? How many elite wings are there in the NBA?
Right, and that's why
there's dozens. So
yeah,
you know, if you're not 100% sure about any of these guys, you know, lean towards the odds a little bit, right? There's the odds of Anthony Edwards, you know, his game fitting the modern NBA and him thriving are much higher than James Wiseman for a lot of reasons, you know, and injuries are a factor in that too, you know, and so. That's one of the many reasons why I think Anthony Edwards has to be, you know, the top guy on their board.
Well, I think any of these top wings. I mean, I've been on the Tyrese Haliburton train for like a week now. I'm convinced that if I were the Warriors, he'd be my number one pick at this point. I agree with your reporting and your reasoning, and I do. And look, I'm hearing the same stuff by Anthony Edwards. Like, that's probably the number one guy if they get the number one pick. But they might not get the number one pick. Chances are they're not going to get the number one pick, right?
There's much higher chance of getting the number five pick. And if they get the number five pick and get Haliburton, I think that's a great pick.
And if Haliburton and Wiseman are on the board, they're going Haliburton. I'm telling you right now. Whatever wing, like Isaac Okoro, like just whatever kind of wing that's in that five, you know.
I know they like Okoro too. I had someone tell me that. You reminded them of Andre, which is super high praise.
Yeah, because they like his length. They think that he could be a ball handler right away. Maybe not a shooter right away, but they think he can handle the ball a little bit right away. And he's the best defender. He's the best wing defender in the draft. Done. Like, if you look at what the Warriors need, those are the kind of the guys that they're looking for. And he's athletic too, which is extremely helpful. I think people would be shocked to see how low Wiseman is on the Warriors board. I legitimately think Warriors fans would be shocked to see how low Wiseman is.
Yeah, and it's I'm kind of honestly over talking about this because it's just the reason we keep talking about this is because everyone keeps throwing out these reports. And honestly, anyone reporting this doesn't know what they're talking about. They're just kind of guessing because the Warriors don't have an elite center and they're looking at it and they're literally just putting one-on-one together. Like, well, Bender got minutes for them towards the end of the last season, so of course they would take Wiseman. It's like, no, it's so much more complicated than that. You have to understand the system, what the Warriors value, all these other things. So, you know,
we also just put out the fact that Steve Kerr,
these reports are probably not going to go away, and it just tells you, you know, who's actually dialed in with what's going on.
I mean, there could be some smokescreen setting here too from the Warriors, feeding guys like Bucher and other people who they don't really need around.
Let's look at his wording when Bucher throws out a ridiculous report like this. Often the wording, I forget exactly what it was in this report, but it was something that made it sound like it could have very well been an executive from another front office. Like the GM of the Knicks has no idea what the Warriors are doing. You know, if he tells Rick Bucher that doesn't mean anything. Like, so, you know, just be careful about, as a reader, when you're reading something like that, try to have a basic idea of maybe where this is coming from and who would actually know what they're talking about.
I'll get you out of here on this. Just from your personal, I know you love the NBA draft. This is your jam. And you've been deep dive scouting some of these prospects and stuff like that. If you're Bob Myers, if you're in charge, and let's say not the number one pick because like you're all in on Anthony Edwards, but let's say you end up at the number five pick. Who's your Tyrese Haliburton? Who's the guy that you're kind of like fingers crossed is still there, and I'm excited that he's still here. We're going for it.
Yeah, you know, I do like Haliburton. I think for what the Warriors are trying to do, I think Okoro. I really like Okoro. The more I look at him, the more I think this is a guy who's going to have a 15-year career in the NBA and be potentially an all defensive team guy. And maybe, you know, if he can improve a little bit offensively, maybe make an all-star team or two. I think he has that type of ceiling. He's super young, super athletic, really smart. He has enough physical tools to be able to make an impact offensively, even though his jump shot isn't great right now. And I think he can command major minutes from day one in the NBA just because of his defense and how smart he is. So in a draft with so many questions, he has a lot of things to really like. So I'm going to go with Okoro if I'm them and I'm at number five and he's available. If it's between him and Halliburton, I think it's a tough decision, but I would lean toward Okoro.
He can kind of do that Kawhi thing where he walks in as like a lockdown defender day one, can just participate in the offense. And if you're lucky, I'm not saying he would be Kawhi, but if you're lucky, he just completely pops, right? That three-point shot comes along. He develops as a ball handler. He's just a maniacal worker.
He's a perennial all-star. I mean, I'm not saying he's going to be, but he has a chance. And I'm not sure that Halliburton does, which is why I would give the nod to Okoro.
I said that would be the last thing, but I want to follow up because we kind of in this draft age, right? We have months and months leading up to it. We're kind of scouting different players, and you got a hot name here, and then you got a new hot name next week. We were talking about Denny.
We have too much time on our hands, man.
Well, this is always the case, right? But you and I were talking about Denny a lot. I don't know, about a month ago, and we just sort of stopped.
Yeah.
I wonder if you're hearing the same stuff I'm hearing about Denny in regards to the Warriors, that they're intrigued by him. They've scouted him a lot. I think Monty Poole reported that recently for NBC Sports, but I reported that, I don't know, like a month ago too. So, you know, it's out there, but I'm wondering what you're hearing about it, as far as what are their feelings on him? Because I haven't gotten a good sense of that, if I'm being honest with you. It's more of been,
they're really intrigued.
They
really like him. Yeah, they like him a lot. My understanding was as of like a month ago, he was right up there in the top three on their board. The big question with him is his jump shot. And I know he's kind of someone that's hard to evaluate because he shot so poorly from the free throw line in the EuroLeague, and I think a lot of people are really scared by that. But if you look at his technique, you look at his film, he doesn't have a bad jump shot, and it actually started to fall towards the latter half of his EuroLeague season. I don't put as much stock in his free throw percentage. I don't think that should scare you away. He has great court vision. He's a really good passer. He's got point guard like skills and a small forward, power forward type body. So I think the Warriors think he has a tremendous upside. They think he could be a great player in this league. And I do think there's a chance, you know, if they end up getting like the 2, 3, or 4 pick, that they take a hard look at him and maybe take him. They definitely like him. They like him as much, if not more, than the other guys we're talking about, Halliburton, Okoro, those guys.
Oh, very good. Connor, always appreciate you jumping on. We didn't have you on for La Tuesday. We had you on La Friday instead. But
I know. I got bumped, man. I got big time by Chad Ford.
That's right. I texted you. I'm like, sorry, man, not this week. But appreciate you coming on because this is good stuff. Charles T. Hamilton joins me next to discuss some free agent targets. This is Locked On Warriors. I'm joined now by Charles T. Hamilton, who has his usual Friday free agent targets, but I wanted to start with this question, Charles, from Twitter. Who are some memorable names that the Warriors may have been linked to but ultimately didn't sign over the past 10 years? And I wanted to bring you on to talk about this because I thought it was a really interesting mailbag question. We don't know when free agency is going to happen, any of this stuff. But and look, the Warriors aren't going to have a whole lot of cap room this year to make a lot of moves, but let's just expand it from just free agency. Just names in the trade market. They obviously have the traded player exception, all these things. They have means to make some moves. The big names that they've been quote-unquote linked to recently have been Giannis, Ben Simmons, guys like that. But I went back to 2015 before, obviously, they signed Kevin Durant to see what other guys that they had been linked to. And there was obviously nobody to the extent, the as big a name as Kevin Durant. But they were linked to guys like Ray Allen and Amari Stoudemire, and both of those guys were in the twilight of their careers. Amari Stoudemire, of course, was just getting over an injury-plagued season or a stint with the Knicks, and a lot of people thought that had the Knicks bought out Stoudemire, that the Warriors could have scooped him. And that seems like something that the Warriors would have done with Stoudemire, right? They like these sort of veteran centers. Like, that could have been interesting.
Oh, yeah. No, it's definitely – that's the thing. A couple of the names that come to mind are centers.
Right.
I forget when – when did Iguodala sign? Was it 13 or 14?
Yeah.
I think it was 14. Yeah. And I remember the rumors initially were that the Warriors were going after Dwight Howard. And mm-hmm. I think he picked – did he pick Houston? Was that the year he went to Houston? You know,
That was the year he went to Houston. No, that was the year he went to the Lakers, wasn't it? No, that was the year he went to Houston because he went to the Lakers in 2012.
Yeah, so he was one of the ones they were linked to, but not getting him allowed them to get Andre Iguodala, if they did sign Dwight Howard, I doubt they would have been able to get Andre. You know, they might have tried to figure it out.
From reports back then, their first choice was Dwight Howard.
Oh, yeah.
And they ended up getting Andre Iguodala. So this whole light years ahead thing is kind of interesting. And then, and then Ethan Strauss had that report in his book that, and look, it's been disputed. I don't know if it's true, but he said that the Warriors were prepared to trade both Steph and Clay for Chris Paul.
Yeah.
And I don't know that that's so, but I do believe that the Warriors were interested in Chris Paul because I don't think that they were sold on Steph Curry being the full-time point guard. That old regime, I don't think that they were. They kept Monte Ellis around for a while, and they always had like Jarrett Jack after that. They always had these real like sort of pure point guard types until the new regime kind of took over and just empowered Steph the way that they have. But it would make sense, right? Because Chris Paul and Dwight Howard right around then had been sort of talking about possibly teaming up, and maybe it would have been in Golden State.
Yeah. Yeah, it's possible. I mean, that was one of them. The DeAndre Jordan, you know, they gave him an offer sheet that the Clippers matched.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was like 4 for 44, something like that. Might have been more. But, you know, linked to him, obviously. Who else? There were always rumors that the Warriors were interested. And, you know, when this was before they were really good. And when you're a bad team, you're used for leverage. And so were the rumors really true or not? Like, who knows? You know, as being a fan of a bad football team, the Raiders, they get used as leverage a lot too, you know, like, oh, they're linked to this big name. And it's usually just a way to, you know, get
what's
a little
it like
more
being
money.
A Clemson fan. Are you like at least that team?
Yeah. Look, they had a good draft last year, so I trust them this year. But yeah, you better like Clemson if you're a Raiders fan right now. You know what? I think 50% of their draft class over the last 2 years is Clemson. So.
Yeah, but you just have to root for them after they do all their winning is the problem.
Yeah. Oh, come on now.
I'm a Dolphins fan. Anyway, they've been bad since the 80s, so I don't care.
Yeah. Yeah, seriously, man.
I think this is an interesting conversation to have now, though, because the Warriors are kind of back into this being linked thing. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how much of it is – like you said, you're used as leverage when you're bad. I mean, that's why the Sacramento Kings are virtually – always tied to every free agent, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
there were Andre Iguodala rumors? Does anyone actually believe Andre Iguodala was going to go to the Kings before he re-signed with the Warriors?
He said that he wasn't going to. He's came out and said he's like that was just a leverage play. Like, thanks for saying that, man. We all knew that
exactly.
But now you know you're used when you're bad as leverage. But now there's real things like you're good, so now you get tied to the Amari Stoudemires, the Ray Allens, like these buyout kind of come out of retirement type candidates, who you know in the end stages of their career maybe ring chasing, which is always fun. Like those guys are always very interesting to me. But then obviously since the Kevin Durant thing, it's like that now. The Warriors have proven that they can take big swings, that they're willing to take big swings. I mean, even Durant to D'Angelo Russell to trading Russell for Andrew Wiggins, like they are willing to take big swings now. And I do think that puts the Warriors in this forever conversation of superstar X is available. Will they go do that? And not to always bring the Miami Heat into every conversation I ever have, but that's you know that's what I do. That they have established that reputation, right? Because of Pat Riley, because of Pat Riley's willingness to take big swings. The Boston Celtics, same thing with Danny Ainge. His willingness to take big swings to trade Isaiah Thomas for Kyrie, for Pat Riley to make the Shaquille O'Neal trade. It's landmark deals like that that just forever put you in that conversation. The Warriors are flatly in this conversation now and will be as long as Bob Myers is around and calling the shots, right? And that's why when Giannis is you know, available and he's not, but you know, whatever, like when his extension date is coming up or when Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, when rumors about them breaking up are out there, like whatever speculation is out there, the Warriors are going to be part of this conversation in perpetuity until Bob Myers is gone.
Always. And you know what? Not just Bob Myers, excuse me, not just Bob Myers, but Joe Lacob. As long as Joe Lacob is running this team, he's going to want superstars. He's going to want big names because he's competitive. But on top of that, big names sell tickets. So, you know, he's said it since his first day. He wants to win championships and all that stuff. But, you know, Bob's the man right now. But as long as Joe is, signing the checks, there's always going to be a want for superstars. And it with some of the rumors we've talked about, you know, it's almost come back to bite him a couple times. If a Kevin Love Clay trade happened, if, you know, whatever other big name, if they got Dwight Howard instead of Andre Iguodala. So as fun as it is, it can be a detriment at times. So as long as you have someone, another voice to be reasonable about this stuff, it is a good thing. But at the same time, you know, like who knows what actually would have happened with some of these big names that they wanted.
What's a big name out there that, or maybe not even out there, just a big name in the NBA, regardless of speculation or rumors, it's just one player you would love to see on the Warriors, never mind contract, never mind it being realistic. And obviously, you know, and like, let's just not even count Giannis because that one's, well, let me ask you this first question before I ask you the last question. Do you want, like, you obviously want Giannis on the Warriors, but do you really want Giannis on the Warriors?
Yeah. Well, I mean, why not? Like, of course.
I feel like every Warrior, like the way that the Warriors fans, I don't know, treated is not the right word, but like the way they responded to the Kevin Durant teams.
I just did this whole thing
on the podcast about your favorite teams. And like nobody cared about the Durant teams. Like people cared about them, but they liked the first championship team more without Durant because it felt more earned. Like if you get Giannis, it's not earned. You're not earning another championship. You're just not. You're just winning them. And I just like, do you really want that as a Warriors fan again?
I do. Look, man, I could care less if however you win championships. If the Warriors could somehow play the worst team in the league to win a championship, I would be down for that every single year. Like, I don't really understand some of this high horse talk that I hear from certain sports fans or analysts. Like,
I'm on my high horse. That makes no sense to me. If you could just beat the Hawks last year and win an NBA championship.
Give me the Hawks. We'll sweep them. Maybe let them win one game, you know, just to make them feel good. And we take the ring. Like, I am all for it. Yeah. I never understood the you know, high horse integrity stuff, but for, you know, different strokes for different folks. I just want championships. You know, I want parades, man. It's not poor sportsmanship to win however possible. That's sports. That's competition. That's, you know, wanting to win. So
what's the big name you want?
The big name. It's weird because I obviously Kevin Durant was an upgrade over this player, but I think this player would have been a long-term fit. I think he'd still be with the Warriors. I think he would have been that fourth guy that they could run with for a long time, depending on injuries. But it's Paul George. I love his game, love what he brings. I think he would have, you know, personality-wise would have been a fit. His game obviously would have been a fit. And that's another thing that people always talk about, which, again, we'll never know what would have happened if KD didn't sign with the Warriors. But they're, you know, oh, they never would have won again, this and that. You know, they would have had Harrison Barnes. But my thing is, like we just talked about with Bob Myers and Joe Lacob, they would have always continued to go after superstars. So Paul George started getting disgruntled in Indy. Would they have gone after him? Would they have gone after Jimmy Butler? You know, whoever. Chris Paul got upset. All the players that moved – you can't tell me that the Warriors wouldn't have been on one of those, in on one of those guys at least. But as far as the superstar I'd want, yeah, Paul George, I think would be a great fit and, you know, brings everything, at least on my checklist, wing, check, great defender, check, solid 3-point shooter, check, you know, can go ISO. Like he just checks all the boxes for me.
He was unbelievable, not this last year, but the year his final season, Oklahoma City. I mean, he was an MVP candidate. He was unbelievable. And to me, Paul George was always one of these players, like you could just see He's always been fascinating to me because you could just sort of see it work, it kind of clicking for him into place. He was drafted in the middle of the first round for Indiana. He kind of bursts onto the scene before Kawhi Leonard did in guarding LeBron James, which his claim to fame was going toe to toe with LeBron James in a way that, you know, got Kawhi Leonard to the place that he got to, gave Andre Iguodala a Finals MVP. Like, that just going toe to toe with LeBron James has really set people up, and he was sort of the first version of that, I felt like. And you know, I think he kind of got a big head after that and kind of ended up being more Carmelo Anthony than LeBron James after that first couple of years in Indiana. He started just chucking up mid-range shots, thinking, I'm all that. You know, this is my team now. It's no longer Danny Granger's kind of deal. And then eventually figured it out, I think, in that, you know, obviously had the broken leg thing, which was gruesome and horrific, but then goes to Oklahoma City. I remember talking to him. I think it was his first year in Oklahoma City, or maybe it was his last year in Indiana. It was like right when he started making that change. And I brought up his shot chart and I said, have you made a conscious effort to get to the rim more? Because you're literally getting to the rim like 4 or 5 times more per game now. And you're using your body to create contact a lot more, I've noticed. And he said, yeah, that's literally what my entire summer was based on, was that exact thing you just said. And you kind of saw that working for him. And all of a sudden he became this like efficient player. And then you see all the great things, like his 3-point shooting coming along. He's getting to the basket, getting to the foul line. The defense was back to like that Indiana Pacers type level when he was going toe to toe with LeBron. Yeah. And then it culminates in this like MVP caliber season in Oklahoma City. And then the trade to the Clippers to join Kawhi Leonard. Fascinating career for a lot of reasons. I was, and like, in case it's not obvious, I'm like all the way in on Paul George.
Oh, yeah.
But when he had that Carmelo Anthony phase, I was all the way out on Paul George. I was like, this guy's not the real deal. And so just for me personally, it's been interesting. All right, let's get to Free Agent Fridays. Every Friday you get on the show, you present 2 free agent possibilities and we debate it. So let's go for it. Who are the 2 free agent targets this week?
All right. I'm actually excited about these. You know, we've gone over some guys who have potential to contribute, you know, mostly end of the roster type stuff. But these two, I think, could actually be, you know, 6th, 7th guys on the team playing every night, 20 plus minutes a night, you know, potentially even in that small ball lineup, death lineup, whatever you want to call it. And one of them is Derrick Jones Jr., who you guys have heard me talk about a lot. And then the other is Mo Harkless. And the reason why it's both of them, again, I'm being as realistic as possible. I do think they're both within the price range of the Warriors. Derrick Jones Jr., I do think to get him away from Miami, you might have to give him that taxpayer mid-level, which I would be okay with, and I'll explain in a second. Mo Harkless, it's tougher. You could maybe get him for a minimum, but you might have to go at least part of the taxpayer mid-level, if not all of it. Again, it just depends what the market dictates. Derrick Jones Jr., he's 23. He'll be 25. He won't be 25. He'll be 24 next February. And he's a guy, it's hard to find a guy that is going to start the season 23 years old with the experience that he has already as a role player. You know, he's played over 3,000 minutes in his career already, over 2,300 the last 2 years. And last year was a scoring high for him, 8.9 points, or this year, however you want to look at it, because, you know, technically we don't know if the season's going to be over or not. Last year, 7 points, good defender, solid rebounder, you know, just about 4 a game, which isn't great, but still he does contribute in that area.
What, it was like half of those offensive rebounds?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's, you know, good cutter, great finisher. The dunks are awesome, but, you know, dunks are also efficient. Could definitely fill that lob position that Andre Iguodala filled. The biggest knock on him, not a 3-point shooter at all. 27% this year, about 27% in his career. Is that something that you have faith in the Warriors coaches and the spacing that'll get playing with Steph and Klay to fix? Or are you just looking at a guy who is just not a 3-point shooter? I mean, that's the thing. You can live with 32-33%, but 27, that is straight up ignore the guy in the corner kind of numbers. The thing with Mo Harkless, both these guys wings. Derek Jones about 6'6", 210. Mo Harkless about 6'8". They haven't listed it 220, so he's a guy that can defend multiple positions. So can Derek Jones, but Mo is a little bigger, a little stronger, and a capable three-point shooter. I'll put it that way. He's never been high volume. He hit 41% a couple years ago. What was that, 17-18? But he only made 49. So he was 49 of 118. His career high is 68 of 194, 35%. That was the year in the last couple games that he wouldn't even shoot threes because, you know, he had a contract clause, some sort of payout for being at 35%, which I don't blame him. But he's another guy who is, even though he's older than Derek Jones, he's still young. He's turning 27 in, geez, like 2 weeks. So still young enough. You know, you're not looking at a Andre Iguodala age type player or anything like that. As far as the fit goes, even though I like Derek Jones more personally, he's more exciting, athletic, etc. Just that lack of three-point shooting is just such a glaring hole. So for me, if I had to choose, it's tough, but I'd go Mo Harkless right now. And if you have to, give him the mid-level.
Yeah, I'll say this. To get either of them, they're going to have to give them the mid-level. None of them are coming over for the minimum. Derek Jones Jr. is one of these guys that the Miami Heat are going to overpay to keep. The one thing against the Heat is that they do value their own guys a little bit more than they ought to. And so they're gonna try to retain him, even if it costs them their own TPE. And with Mo Harkless, he has enough locker room equity throughout the league where he's just one of these guys who are always going to make, you know, a little bit more than they probably should, just because they're a good locker room presence and they've got some street cred around the league and you know, has some playoff experience and things like that. It is tough. The thing with Mo Harkless, he's really in that sweet spot. He's that age range where the Warriors are going to be looking to add. They want that 26 to 28, 29-year-old guy. And I think they want two of those guys to fill out the roster. I know that you lose Sean Livingston, you lose Andre Iguodala, and you have this youth movement, but you don't want to have to go through this entire youth movement to get old again.
Yeah.
So they're not looking to get 32, 33, 34-year-old players to be in their top 8 or 9 of their rotation. They want that kind of this Mo Harkless type age. But then with Derek Jones Jr., his potential is pretty high, I think. As far as being, you know, a go-to scoring option or a player you can run offense through, I don't think he's ever going to be that at any degree. But he can do a lot of things off the ball. You mentioned the cutting, the offensive rebounding, the try-hardness. I think he's better defensively than Mo Harkless, and a lot of people who don't watch him in Miami would probably laugh because a lot of Warriors fans have seen Mo Harkless up close, and he's a solid defender. Give me Derek Jones Jr. on a possession basis or even in a playoff setting. I know he's not as big, but he actually defends fours better than Mo Harkless does because he's just freaking long. I mean, his arms are all over the place. He plays passing lanes so well. And I trust him guarding positions 1 through 4 more than I trust Mo Harkless guarding. I don't trust Mo Harkless guarding point guards, period. Derrick Jones Jr. can handle it a little bit because he just corrals guys with like those tentacles. So, and I know that the Miami Heat 2 years ago didn't have a first round pick. They scooped up Derrick Jones Jr. from Phoenix and they viewed him as their first round draft pick. That's how high they were. And we know that Miami is good at scouting and projecting these guys, right? Just look at Bam Adebayo and Tyler Hero and Kendrick Nunn and all these guys that they've done. So they've been good at this stuff. So I trust them too. That said, and I think you mentioned a good point with Derrick Jones Jr. is that lob threat. You can just sort of see it working, right? Like you could see Draymond Green working that short roll and having Derrick Jones Jr. cut baseline and get open for a lob. You can sort of see that working. And there's really interesting lineups where you can do with Derek Jones Jr., but I don't know that the space – I don't know you can play him with Draymond is the problem, right? Because you mentioned the three-point shooting there. Like, it works so well with him at the 4 and Draymond at the 5 for that lob threat. And defensively, I think they would be awesome. I think you could play some – like, Derek Jones Jr. was the anchor of Miami's zone. So now all of a sudden you're telling me that the Warriors could play zone every once in a while? Like, that would be an interesting wrinkle for them. So it's just the three-point shooting – it just makes that almost impossible to play that because you're right. It's so bad that there's two guys on the floor that you're going to ignore, which means there's two more guys that can basically, now you double Steph and Clay basically. So for those reasons, I'd probably end up on Mo Harkless, just for those reasons.
Like, if he could just get to, like, 33% or 32, you could live with it, because he does so much else well, but just the fact that it's so bad.
I don't think it's ever coming around. I think, and look, it might come around to 30%, but it's not something you're going to trust, and it's not something you're, like, defenses are going to respect for years, and unless it gets to, he's been working on it nonstop with Miami. I know that, but it just hasn't come around yet. And the other thing about him is he kind of suffers from the Alphonso McKinney syndrome, where he can't dribble in a straight line. Mm-hmm. Like, he just can't. And so that's a problem for a Warriors team that likes to swing and they like to move the ball. They like to drive. Everybody is supposed to drive and kick. It's not just the ball handlers. Everybody has to be able to drive and kick on that team, including centers. They need to be able to handle the ball a little bit. So if you can't just dribble in a straight line, if I don't trust you to not dribble it off your knee in a playoff setting, that's problematic. And not that – I don't think Mo Harkless is that much better than Derrick Jones Jr. Like, they both sort of suffer from that.
That's what I was going to say. Neither of them are really ball handlers, which is definitely something the Warriors are looking for. But they are both kind of, as far as height and wingspan goes, you know, the kind of wings that the Warriors love, 6'6", 6'7", 6'8", 7-foot wingspan, because that matters so much as far as defense goes. And one last thing, regardless of who they spend, not regardless, because if they decide to spend their taxpayer MLE on, you know, a 35-year-old, it's a little different. But if they can get a young guy like Mo Harkless or Derrick Jones, I really hope they go multiple years with them. Not sure if they will, but I hope that they do, because that's something that they haven't done with their taxpayer MLE since they've been using it. It's been one-year guys like Cousins and, you know, Nick Young, et cetera. You know, lock up one of these young guys. Don't just go young for 1 year. Try and keep them around and, you know, keep them as part of the team moving forward.
Yeah, my sense is that there's going to be a list of guys that they want to lock down on the MLE and the traded player exception, by the way, for both of these things. That there's going to be a tier of players that they want, and they're going to be trying to, like you said, they want stability and longevity. That's what they're looking for. That was the whole point of this last year. And so they're going to try to get these guys for multiple years. But if for whatever reason they can't get them, there's another tier below that where they're like, you know what? Let's just chase a championship. Yeah. Let's get back to contending. 1 year rentals, like the Rudy Gay types. Like, they're not locking up Rudy Gay for multiple years. They're gonna they get him. It's gonna be on the TPE, and it's gonna be like, you know what? 1 year. But Rudy Gay is not their first option of the TPE, but he's an option. Absolutely.
That's the thing. Also, with the traded player exception, and then say a mid-level player, you know, they may not get the guy that they, because, you know, Miles Turner, let's say they wanted to go after Miles Turner. He's just outside of that traded player exception, just a little too expensive. But they could trade for someone who, you know, let's say makes $15 million, who's not someone they want to keep, but then they can trade that player plus another player for Miles Turner. You know, it's going to be interesting to see how they navigate just the entire offseason, whenever it is.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so you picked Mo Harkless. I think I'm going Mo Harkless, though. Selfishly, I prefer to cover Derrick Jones Jr. because he's
more. You know, I would rather I like him more as a player, but just for the fit, unless you're counting on the Warriors being able to get him to shoot, you know, not 32-33%. Like I said, it's nothing huge, but I just can't bet on that. So, gotta go Mo.
Gotta go Mo. All right. Remember to subscribe to new episodes of Locked On Warriors on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. If you can, rate us, review us, say nice things about us. When we get done here, remember that you can tell your smart device to play the most recent episode of any other Locked On Network podcast, including Rejecting the Screen. Thanks for listening, and stay safe.